Thousands of Central Americans arrive in the U.S. at the U.S. border each year. Violence and poverty in their home countries of Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala are usually blamed for their exodus. Edwin Castellanos points to something else as well, climate change. He says as these countries get warmer and drier, livelihoods are also evaporating. Edwin Castellanos is a climate scientist at Universidad del Valle in Guatemala. He's going to be lecturing this evening at the FedEx Global Education Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he joins me now. Edwin, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Tell us more about the impact of climate change in Central America and what kinds of effects it's having.
Well, Central America is located in an area where climate is already highly variable. And what we have seen in the past decade is that we have seen years of heavy rainfall in between years of lower than average rainfall. Especially in the 5 years, in the last 5 years, we have seen that the timing of the rainfall has become very erratic. Especially the onset of the rainfall in May and in June is now coming later and later. And that has affected small farmers heavily, basically because they rely on this rainfall for watering their crops.
So what does this mean for them? What do they do when this happens?
Well, basically, they lose their crops, and they have to rely on government aid to survive. And unfortunately, governments don't have enough funding to help all these people.
So it's interesting because you say this is an area where the climate is really volatile anyway. There's a lot of rain. It's heavy rain for a period and then dry periods. So this has historically been true. Mm-hmm. But you're saying there's a new pattern now that's really changing the way people make a living.
Exactly. And this is important to understand that basically climate change is an increase or a change in the variability, in the natural variability of the climate. And so Central America is heavily affected by phenomena like El Niño and La Niña. But those events used to happen rather infrequently, every 5 to 7 years. But now, for example, in the last 5 years, we have had a recurrent El Niño situation in the area.
So what happens? You talked about farmers increasingly relying on government aid that you say is not always forthcoming because it isn't there. Is this part of the reason you think that people are having to move, that this accounts for some of the migration?
Certainly, what happens is that migration is a complex situation that has to be seen as a result of many variables. And I would say that the main factor pushing people to migrate would be poverty and the lack of economic opportunities in the area. Added to that, we have the violence that you mentioned. But then if you have this already difficult situation, and on top of that you add the situation of the farmers losing their crops for the year, that certainly gives you a mix of a very complicated situation, pushing them to take these extreme measures.
Yeah, it seems like even more than a mix, you're adding to problems. You're adding to the problem of poverty, which always adds to the problem of crime. So is there initially some internal migration that happens? A farmer might leave one area to try to find another area that hasn't been as hard hit?
That's true also. Especially farmers not only move because of climate internally, but they also move looking for land. Many of these small farmers don't own a plot of land. And so there's some internal migration to areas where they think that there will be more land available. There is also temporary migration of people who move to agricultural areas to work as seasonal farmers or to harvest sugarcane, for example, or coffee. So there's a lot of internal migration happening. But even crops like coffee and sugar are also with very low prices internationally. And that means that these companies are hiring less and less people.
Now, this is an important impact. You've described the impact of climate change. It's important, and it's causing serious problems. Interestingly enough, sea level rise in Central America is not as central a problem as it is other places. Tell us why.
Well, most of the larger population centers in Central America are located on the mountains. And so even though we do see some effects of sea level rise, those effects are happening where people are not living. And also, there's an interesting effect in Central America, because Central America emerged relatively recently in geological times. And so Central America is still emerging, and that is compensated in a way the rise in sea level.
But that doesn't adjust for all of the climate changes that are increasing aridity and too much rain at all at the wrong time. So what are the models forecast now? What do you see coming in the next 20, 30, 40 years?
What we're seeing is that, like I said, the timing of the rainfall is becoming more and more erratic. And so farmers are always complaining that they have a harder time predicting what the weather is going to look like in a specific year. But models in the long term for the century shows that rainfall is going to decrease continuously overall. And so right now we already have many areas suffering for water, and we expect to see more of that happening in the future.
Now, water management, I suppose, would be one of the answers to this, at least in the very short term, because there is, when it rains heavily. Is that any part of the answer, at least in the short term?
For sure, yes. What is happening is that in the past, we have had so much rainfall that we really didn't have to worry too much about water management. But more and more, we are seeing the need to do that, especially water storage, because like you mentioned, when it rains, it pours. And so we have plenty of rainfall, especially in the later part of the rainy season, which happens October and November. So in those months, the problem is too much rainfall, often linked to landslides and flooding. So if we are able to store some of that water for the dry season, then we'll be in better shape.
But all of that costs money, and it costs money at a time when poverty is rising owing to many of these problems. So it's a bad time to need more money.
Exactly. Basically, adapting to climate change requires money. And like you said, money is the limiting factor in many problems in Central America. And so we are hoping that developed countries that offer funding through agreements like the Paris Agreement come through with this funding, because money will definitely make the difference on the ground.
That's where it seems to me these international global agreements are important, because the big polluters and those countries like the United States, which cause are the biggest causes of global warming and climate change, don't always see the effects in the same proportion as Latin American countries, Central American countries do.
Certainly, the problem of climate change is definitely a problem of environmental injustice, because, like you mentioned, countries like Canada and United States, for example, they can add up to 15% or more of the total pollution worldwide. Mm-hmm. But areas like Central America don't even add to 1% of that pollution. And so we certainly don't contribute significantly to the problem, but we are bearing the burden of the consequences of the problem.
Now, what about this? Because politically, we're seeing the United States, at least in this moment under this administration, pulling away from these international agreements, saying, you know, it's not really our problem to the extent that it is in Central America. Do you see any hope that there will be a sort of a better cooperation in the years ahead?
Part of the problem is that this kind of pollution to the atmosphere is not visible. I always comment to my students that, unfortunately, human nature makes us more reactive when we see the problem. And the so-called greenhouse gases are invisible. And so we see the clean air around us, but really, we are really increasing that amount of greenhouse gases in such a way that the climate is being affected. And so I think that only when we feel that pressure of extreme weather events, like you have had also your share here in the U.S., then people are going to start reacting, yes, we need to do something about this problem.
You work on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. What's happening at that level?
This is a group of scientists organized by United Nations, and this group actually had been working since the late 90s, and it was the work of this group that actually gave the first warning of the problem of climate change. Out of the first report that this group produced was that the first agreement on climate change was signed internationally. And so basically this group gets together every 7 to 8 years to produce a report. Currently, we are writing the sixth report. which will be published in 2021, hopefully providing up-to-date information for decision makers to have more to think about when they make their decisions.
Curiously, the preponderance of scientific evidence points to, and I think it is a settled question, although science is always exploring it, new answers can be discovered and developed later on. But at the moment, it's a settled issue about human involvement and human propulsion of climate change. And yet, in this country, there seems to be a debate. Is there much of a debate in Central American countries?
Not at all. If you ask any person in Central America, they are so aware of how crazy the climate has been in the last decades that everybody agrees that this is not normal. There's something happening. And ironically, like you were saying, a lot of the science that is showing that the climate is changing comes from the U.S. And so the great majority of scientists working in IPCC are actually related to U.S. institutions. And so there's a lot of scientific information. The evidence is rather strong. In the last report, the fifth report, IPCC concluded that the uncertainty in the warming of the planet was less than 1%, and the uncertainty in humans being the main factor is less than 5%. And so the scientific evidence is strong. Unfortunately, in some areas of the world, like this country, people are still doubting.
What about regional initiatives? Are there regional initiatives? Obviously, it's a global problem, but what's going on in Central America and Latin America that can at least address this?
Well, in countries like Guatemala, where I'm from, the government reacted in the previous decade out of a series of extreme events like hurricanes and tropical storms. The government passed a climate change law. So we have a law in place that dictates that the government and people in general need to get organized around this problem. And beyond the local laws, we also have regional initiatives. But the main problem, again, is funding. So we are heavily relying on funding from countries from Europe in this case. And U.S. actually also helps us. Interestingly enough, with the change of government here in the U.S., many of the projects that used to be addressing climate change now are addressing climate variability. So it's basically a request on a change of language from the government, but at least we kept some of that help.
Tell us about, you're going to be giving a talk tonight at the FedEx Global Education Center at UNC Chapel Hill. Give us a preview of your message. What will you be saying?
Well, the message is that climate change is real and it's really affecting the region in Central America. And basically that is making a situation worse that was already difficult for people, especially in rural areas, like we've mentioned before, high levels of poverty and violence, farmers producing only the bare minimum to feed themselves. Now, with this changing climate, what we have is a situation where people are having a harder time producing what they need to survive, and therefore they are seeing the option of migration as a more feasible option.
So it might be cheaper and certainly more effective to address these problems and talk about ways in which we can cooperate than even say, oh, building a wall. Who knows?
For sure, yeah, and also, what you have to think is that income to countries in Central America rely heavily on these remittances. I was just checking some numbers from the central bank in Guatemala indicating that the third highest income source of income for the country was remittances, up to 10% of our income.
And so people living here sending money home.
Exactly. Yeah. If you remove that, then that will be a very strong burden at all levels within the country.
Edwin Castellanos is a climate scientist at Universidad de Valle in Guatemala. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
He will be lecturing this evening at FedEx Global Education Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Durham-based singer-songwriter Faith Jones. Stay tuned.